This is the continuation of session one.
Say dunya.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
Dunya.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah.
So the first meditation we talked about was what?
Rejoicing.
That's really good if you don't feel so happy. Okay? It's really good if you are on a 3 or 4 day problem in your mind mode, you know, where you can't be happy because you got some serious problem at work or a serious problem with some other person, and it's hard to meditate because you keep thinking about this problem, or you have a medical problem, then do that rejoicing one where you just try to think of 3 to 5 things that are going right, especially with regard to your Dharma life. Like, okay, I'm no Nagarjuna, but I did meet a Lama, I did get good Lama teachings, and I have some chance. Other people don't have any chance at all, okay? So that's good when you're feeling not too happy or not, you feel a little down, okay? Then secondly, if your life is too busy and you're not able to organize your life or prioritize your life, sit there in the morning and say, I'm going to die at 6 o'clock. Now, what things can I eliminate today? What things should I not do today if I'm going to die at 6 o'clock? And you would just stop doing about 80-90% of what you do. You would just say, that's not relevant because I'm dying today. Okay? And then you would really do, you wouldn't be in the mode of making excuses about not meditating or not doing your practice or something like that. You just say, hey, I'm going to die at 6 o'clock. I might as well get ready. You know what I mean? The bills can wait. My friends can wait. That movie I haven't seen yet. What's it called? Tomorrow Never Comes. Huh? Tomorrow Never Dies. Haven't seen it yet. Well, maybe I can put it off till next life. I heard it was pretty bad anyway. Okay. Something like that. You would just do your practice for 2-3 hours. That's all. And you wouldn't have any problem doing your practice if you really did a good death meditation. That gets your life. Now, third one on the 6 sufferings, which was mainly taught by the first Panchen Lama in a book called Easy Way or Easy Path. It's called Delam. Lamrim Delam. Very famous one of the Lamrims. It's not taught much in the West, and I think it should be in the future. Maybe you guys can do it, okay? You know, people tend to concentrate on Thubten Rinpoche's Lamrim or Jetsun Kapa's Lamrim, but actually the first Panchen Lama's Lamrim is a lot easier, and it's very eloquent. He was a poet. He was one of the greatest poets in Tibet, and it's very, very beautiful. So he gives 6 kinds of suffering. This is good to do when you're having doubts about being a Buddhist, you know? Did I do the right thing to blow all my money and go to Goa, you know? Did I do the right thing not to be a very sociable person, you know? Did I do the right thing not to have a normal life? I mean, all of us have these doubts once in a while, you know what I mean? It seems like other people are having normal lives and, you know, fairly happy lives. And then we're like losing hair over not memorizing a certain text or trying to meditate, you know, that last half hour is so painful and then seem to be losing out on things that other people are enjoying, you know. Did I do the right thing? This is very good for meditation for that. On Sunday, you're going to do one of these 3 on Sundays, okay? And it's going to decide, you're going to decide on how you feel on Sunday morning when you get up, you know, which one of the 3 are you going to do? Ready? Say nyeme.
Nyeme.
Nyeme. Nyeme means no certainty, but it's a very, very specific kind of no certainty. It means you can't trust anything. Nothing stays the same. Nothing stays the same. You can't trust anything, okay? I mean, I've had weeks. In 1 week, I lost a job, lost my best friend, you know, lost a teacher, all in the same week. You know, I mean, your life, you have like 6 good things going on in your life. Like, you're healthy, you have a Dharma teacher, you have a few good friends, you have a job, you have an apartment. And if you have a really bad week, you can lose like 4 out of 5 in a week. You know what I mean? It's like, you can't trust anything. Nothing stays the same. People that you thought were your closest friends, there's some incident, something goes on, and then suddenly, 2 weeks later, you're not talking anymore and you're not going to talk for a few years. You see what I mean? And just it just reversed itself like that. That's nyeme. You were one of the healthiest 45-year-olds you knew. You know what I mean? Like, people would point to you and say, my God, you know, he didn't have his first stroke yet. He still has some hair. His hair is not white. He can still jump up and down, and you feel this subtle pride about it. And then suddenly you get home from the doctor. We met a guy in Arizona like that. He's like showing off. I remember he could jump up. He was putting his boots up on these high posts and stretching his legs. He's like 60 years old, and he was like unstoppable. Then he goes to the doctor and they say, you have this heart condition. You're lucky to be alive. You have to stop even going anywhere. You can't eat anything. And I remember his face. We took him out for dinner the next night. Suddenly he looks 15 years older. His body didn't change. Just his mental, you know, he just believed the doctor. You know what I mean? And then just changes. You see, nothing, you can't hang on to anything. You know, you can't. There's no relationship which is steady. There's no job which is impregnable. There's no apartment or house you have that can't be lost in a week. Bad luck, something like that. And that nyeh-meh means that. Nyeh-meh means even the things that are going right in your life are very unstable. Okay. Say lo miche. Lo miche. Lo miche. Okay. Lo miche means you can't be satisfied. Okay? No matter what you get. And it's this curve, you know? It's this curve. You didn't have a lama. You were looking for a lama. You met this crazy American lama. You know? You got all excited. This is the honeymoon. And you thought it's going to change all your problems. And then you get to know them and know them and know them and know them. And then you get used to them. You know what I mean? And then you start to see faults. And then you start to wonder why they're not teaching 12 hours a day instead of 6. And then you start to wonder why they're not teaching today because you want to go to the beach. And the basic problem is not them. It's just that a human being cannot be satisfied. Within a week, within 2 weeks, within a month, it doesn't matter what you get. You know, we have a lama in America who's our root lama. He was the number one Rinpoche Geshe in Tibet out of 10,000 monks in 1954. Okay, became assistant abbot of the Tantric College in 1959. You know, is the most extraordinary living teacher of most of the subjects of Buddhism. You know, and then people, it's an hour and a half to get to his house, so people are like, I don't feel like going today, or, you know, I don't know why he teaches that. I wish he would teach that. Or he doesn't teach enough. Or he teaches too late. When I go, he runs over for an hour. You know, he's 80 years old. And people are complaining that he keeps going. You know what I mean? And it's just our minds. You see, I mean, if someone told you this man's coming from Tibet, you know, he's the ex-abbot of the Tantric College, ex-abbot of Saramay. He's got his Rinpoche Geshe before all the current Rinpoche Geshes were born. You know, out of 10,000 monks, he was number one in the Potala Palace. And then you put up a big poster and you charge $40 and the guy will show up, you know. Everybody will crowd into the room, you know. And then if you say, he's around all the time, you can go anytime you want, you don't have to go, it doesn't cost anything. And then people get used to it. Lo miche means human nature is to just, you just become dissatisfied after a day or after a month or after 6 months, after you get used to things. And then you demand more. And that's human nature. It doesn't matter who you met and became their boyfriend or girlfriend. It doesn't matter what kind of income you have. You'll become dissatisfied with it within a year or 6 months or 6 weeks or 6 hours. It's just your mind. It's the state of your mind. The human mind cannot be satisfied. And that's one of our, to me, see, the first mentioned lama is not talking hell realms. He's not talking animal realms. He's not talking all this stuff. He's saying, if you could stay in this human realm as a nice 20-year-old, you know, with all your hair and, you know, beautiful face and everything else, still you'd be unhappy because of these six. You see what I mean? It's just your nature. You make yourself unhappy, is what he's saying. Okay? Okay. Say yang yang. Lu tor. Yang yang. Sam jor. Okay. These go together. Yang yang lu tor. Yang yang means over and over. Lu tor means you die over and over. You give up bodies. You shuck off bodies over and over. Lu means body. Tor means you shuck them off. you keep dying. Okay, you keep leaving your own body. Okay. How this happens, we're going to talk about in the context of emptiness in the next class. Okay, so I'd rather leave it for that. Okay. It's, as I've said many times in these classes, it's not as if there's a factory in some part of India which is making bodies, like dog bodies, human bodies, snake bodies, and then there's this big guy in the sky who's keeping track of your life, and if you've been bad, he sends you down to a dog body factory and they put your soul in there or something like that. I mean, that's coming from a Judeo-Christian background. That's the feeling you have about rebirth, that there's all these dead bodies lying around, or fresh bodies with hatchbacks in them, and then they put your mind in there, they catch your spirit, and they put your spirit in there, and then you know, that's the way you saw it when they talk about rebirth. Rebirth is much more frightening. Rebirth is provable. It's something we can talk about in the next class. Okay. Samjor, Yangyang Samjor means to make the crossing over and over again. Samjor means to make the crossing. And that means to be born into another body over and over again. I think you have to talk about it in more detail when you do a teaching on this, and I'm not going to talk about it right now. I'm going to save it for the next class. Okay? The two sufferings of having to leave your body again and again, and the suffering of having to take a new body again and again. Okay, ready? Say, Tomen.
Tomen.
Cure. Tomen. Tomen.
Cure.
To means up, men means down. You know what gyur means. Going up and down, over and over again. Okay? And it just means that, you know, I was in this big company. We had 800 employees. I worked my way up to vice president. Okay? And I got in the office. I sat down in the chair. You know, it's the first time I had this swivel chair. There's something about a swivel chair in a corporation. If you get a swivel chair, you're a big shot. And then you have a desk between you and the people, which is another sign. And then I was swiveling around in the chair and looking out at my dynasty, you know, a couple hundred employees. And then I was thinking, what do I do after this? And it was a very frightening thought, because you can't go anywhere but down after that. You either die, you get fired, or you go down. But there's nowhere else to go. The company is a private company. The owner has no way he's going to make me a shareholder, and he never did. I'm just sitting there reflecting that there's nowhere to go here but to a coffin or a nursing home or a lower position. You see what I mean? And it was a strange thought, and it came true, you know, like... that's it, you know. There is no position you can hold on to very long. It just doesn't work that way, you know. You're famous for a while, 15 minutes or more. People like you for a while, and then suddenly people start not liking you. By the way, it has nothing to do with your behavior or your activities or anything else. You're probably doing the same thing you did last year. It's just your karma runs out, their karma changes, and then suddenly you don't seem so smart to them, or you don't seem so VP to them, or you don't seem like such a boyfriend or a girlfriend to them, and then suddenly you're not interesting anymore. And then you're just men. Men means low, you know? And you keep cruising between these two extremes over and over in life. You know, anybody here who's been in any kind of company or any kind of relationships, or that's just the way it goes. Your health goes up and down like that. You're just constantly on this roller coaster of life. And you can't hang on to anything. You can't, especially any kind of success is normally quite short, you know. And then there's this very sad thing where you meet people and all they can do is tell you about how successful they used to be. You know, like, it's very sad to live with a person like that or be near a person like that, because they're constantly talking about the good old days. You know, they introduce themselves to people as, I'm the one who used to be, you know, this. And it's sad to meet them, because it means they're already in the lower part, okay? And you can't get anything going right for very long. Then it just changes and you're down again, okay? Last one, and then we'll break the class. This is the last one. Are you getting depressed? I mean, that's the point of this meditation. No, they say do these six when you're feeling too high, like you have trouble getting yourself to practice. And also, especially when you're having doubts about your life, you know. I became a Buddhist. I'm spending all this time meditating, trying to keep my vows, doing things like that. Did I do the right thing? to give up that job or that marriage or other things like that. Say Drogme. Drogme means, look, in the end, Drogme means companion. Me means you don't have any. In the end, you're alone. And that's the worst of the six sufferings, okay? In the end, no one can come with you very long. You have short liaisons with people. You get married, you're with the person 5, 10, 15 years. You get a job, you stay there a year, 2 years, 3 years. You get an apartment, you get a dog. You have friends, you have associations, you have health. But sooner or later, you're off on your own again. You come into the world alone, totally alone, and you leave totally alone. No one can go with you at all. You can't really keep anyone. You really don't have any friends that you will have shortly. Family. In the end, every one of us is completely alone. And it doesn't matter how badly you want to stay with other people, or even, you know, the rare people in your life that you do get along with from steadily, one of you will die first. One of you will have to move first. And then you're just alone again. And that's the basic condition in our life, is that you can't stay with anyone. You lose them, okay? And that, those are the six sufferings of the first Panchalama. He says, if you have trouble, if you feel some doubt that you're on the right path, then think about these six, because these are faced by all human beings. All human lives boil down to these six. And you're one of the one in a million who's intelligent enough to do something about it before it's too late, okay? Meditating, practicing, studying, trying to understand emptiness, karma, keeping your vows, it's all the kind of activities people would do if they knew that this was the six ways that things are, you know? Yeah. The point of Buddhist practice is to reverse these six. The point of Buddhism says that these six are not inevitable, that you can stop them. But it takes intense training, and it takes intense devotion and effort to that exercise of getting rid of those six. Okay, people ask me how hard should you practice, or how long does it take, or things like that to make some kind of change in those sufferings. I say it's like learning piano. Okay, like Toby is a good piano player, right? Shy. Winston's a good piano player. I don't know. 10 years. 10 years. 10 years of pretty steady practice. Of course, he's only 9, but... just kidding. It's not. It takes about... You want to know how long it takes to make... You know, if you put this kind of effort into it, the kind of that you would put into learning piano well, and you were very sincere about it, and you practiced every day 2 or 3 hours, and had a very fine teacher, and really committed your life to that, and took your time off when you have to take your time off, then it would take about that kind of effort. And if you make less effort than that, then you probably can't change these six sufferings. You're probably stuck there. If you do make that effort, you don't have to go through these six kinds of suffering. You can change them. Okay, that's why we're here. And that's the point of this class. Okay. See you again around... What time is it now? You want to start a little late? 7:15? Let's start around 7:15, okay, 7:15, and we'll be on to the second meditation, which is compassion, okay, and emptiness mixed together for some reason, okay, all right, we'll do some prayers. You're going to get a notebook, and the prayers are in the notebook, okay?
Sing a march of our soul.
This is the end of session one. Session two.
Here we go. Okay. I'm going to read you the second. I'm going to read you the second part of the 7 points. Okay. So try to listen carefully. Chena milam tabor sam ma ki rikbe shila che nyambo ni kyang rang sa tu lo kon shi ngon du sha tin sam gi me ge bur cha dong nen ni bo bel mar chang de ne lung na kyang ba cha yu sum tuk sum ge za sum chenam kun de chi gi jang nem be korin rang ne cham. I'll give you just a brief translation, and then we'll talk about the details. Chunam Milam Tabar Sam means, think of all things around you as being like a dream. Ma ke rikbe shilache, examine the nature of the mind, which is unborn. Nyenbo Nyikyang Rang Sartre, the antidote itself is freed. How do you say? How do I translate it? Let's see. Yeah, it's gone to is. That's pretty good. It's gone to is. Ngo kun chi ngang du sha. Let it go in the essence, source of all things. Tin sam gyu mi kibur cha means, in between sessions, be a figment of the imagination. Practice giving and taking alternately. Let the two ride on the wind. Three objects, three poisons, three stores of virtue. Practice throughout the day in words. The order of takings to start with yourself. Okay. This you're going to do on Mondays, okay? What's Sunday? Yeah, we call it Foundation Day. Foundation Day means you can either do a rejoicing meditation if you don't feel too happy. You can do a death meditation if you're having too many things to do and you want to straighten out your life and your priorities. And then you can do a... What's the third one? Six sufferings meditation. Especially, well, if you're too happy, but also if you start having doubts about the path you've chosen. If being a crazy Buddhist starts to seem crazy to you, then do the suffering meditation, and then you'll look like the smartest person on the whole block. Okay. Seriously, I do it all the time, because I get these doubts all the time, you know, like, because of what I teach, people give up their houses and give up their jobs and go out to wild places and sit there on their asses and meditate, and I'm like, start to feel like some reservations, like, you know, and then I think about the six sufferings and I think, well, yeah, we did the right thing. Okay, so here we go. First part here says, well, I thought it would be nice to go through how to get into a meditation. Okay, so I promised you that. Most of you know this already. I thought for the people who haven't heard it, you should hear it again. So each day of the week, before you do your meditation, you do the preliminaries. A lot of people come to me and say, why is my meditation not working? I say, it's possibly because you're not doing the preliminaries correctly. So it's important to do those well. So I'm going to... There's a beautiful verse that some of you probably don't know, and it summarizes the preliminaries. It's very beautiful. Also, if you've heard this 10,000 times already, then do what I used to do with my teacher. When it got to the point where he was saying things that I'd heard already a lot, then I would try to watch how he taught it with the intention of, you know, being able to teach it to other people. So you can shift from learning it to memorizing it to internalizing it and then go on to see how it's taught and how you might want to teach it to other people. Okay, so it should never be boring. I mean, even up until 25 years after I'd started with Ken Rinpoche, I would still go to alphabet class, A, B, C, D, Kakaganga, to see how he did it and how he pronounced it and where he went from there and could I anticipate where he would go. And so don't waste your... Never waste your time. Never think I've heard it before. Okay? Here we go. Say, Chaksa wa dang. Okay, this is a very famous verse. Okay? Chaksa wa dang. Chaksa wa means the first of the preliminaries is to bow down to a holy being. Okay? And I'm going to give you the basic morning schedule. Okay? You have to meditate every morning or it doesn't work, okay? To get the goals of meditation, if you don't do it every day, it doesn't work, all right? It just doesn't work. So you have to decide that if you want to learn to meditate, you're going to have to do it every day, okay? And these are the processed. By the way, if you learn to meditate, I always tell people you might be able to see emptiness directly, you might be able to see your future lives, you might be able to see your own enlightenment, you might be able to reach all those goals, read other people's minds, perform miracles. These are all things you can do in meditation. If that doesn't impress you, you can also run your life better. Okay? Like, you can really, you can do anything better with meditation. And what happens, Arya Nagarjuna said, is that you go into a state of meditation all day long. You see what I mean? The idea of meditating every morning is that you go into a state of santan or samadhi all day long. So, I mean, and it's deeper during your meditation, but you continue it during your working hours and when you come home and study. So once you reach that point where you're meditating all the time, then even if you just do business during the day, the business is is well thought out. You're constantly responding to business problems much better than other people. And over the long run, and I was in business 15 years, we made hundreds of millions of dollars from my division, the one I was in charge of. We just cranked out money like crazy because, you know, everybody, it also infects other people around you. If you are in a state of samadhi all day, and I don't mean your eyes are up in your head and you're, you know, I mean, you're just clear, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. That's what clarity means in meditation. It doesn't mean how clear the object is. It refers to your mental alertness. You're just wired all the time. And I don't mean in a nervous way. I mean, you're totally aware of everything all the time. And then problems come up. You can deal with them. Decisions have to be made. They're just simple, immediate. You evaluate things and immediately make. And this is from being in a state of samadhi almost all day long. But you got to do it right in the morning, okay? So those are my selling points for meditation. Meditation is not something you do for an hour in the morning. It affects your entire day. And over a period of time, you start to see, you start to pull away from other businessmen or other artists or other dancers or other filmmakers or just the quality of being able to concentrate all day long. The meditation starts during the session and keeps going after you stand up and continues to the next morning. Even in your dreams, I mean in advanced stages, you are analyzing emptiness during your dreams and things like that. And that's a very common practice. So it's the point is to stay in samadhi all day long. Have to start out with the preliminaries. Okay, have to start out right. Wake up. Don't get up right away. If you're doing, if you know what the Kechik Chonge is, you do that. Okay, if you know what Kirim is, you do that. If you know what Dakha Kepa is, you do that. And then you might want to do a quick death meditation. I'm going to die tonight. What should I do with my day? And only then you get up out of your bed. If you're studying Damte Ge, you do Yinbe Kunju. Okay? Then you get out of bed. And then you go into the bathroom. It's very important to clear out your nose. Okay? I understand that in yoga they do a similar thing with what's it called? Pranayama or something. I don't know. Okay, sounds like prana to me. It's very similar. That's a very good practice. Okay, in the morning, blow your nose really hard. Blow out all the... In the monastery, you'll see. They don't use toilet paper. They say only rich people keep those things. We don't. They just go like this over the sink and just blow out everything forcefully. Okay, and then make sure the nasal passages are clear. Shouldn't breathe through your mouth. Then wash your face, get your face brightened up. Very important that your mouth tastes good. Even in ancient sutras, before the Buddha teaches, he's like brushing his teeth. Your mouth should smell good, taste good. Then have something, a little bit to drink, but don't eat anything. Okay. Then make sure your meditation area is beautiful. Have an altar with a representation of the Buddha's body, mind, and speech, meaning a statue, a book, and a stupa, like we have here. Everybody got stupas at Bogar. Then make sure you have a nice cushion. I have this crescent-shaped cushion that I started using recently. And, you know, I'm sort of a freak about these things. I've tried everything. And I really suggest you try it, you know. It seems to give you the support that the scripture says for your back. I find that the zafus... Personally, they're a little, I start to rock off of them or something, you know. They're not quite, they don't ground me or anchor me the way that these things do. I don't know who invented these, but Ellie got them off the internet or something. Yeah. And then they really help under your thighs. It's important that your thighs be done. And then there should be a cushion under your ankles, because that's where your feet start to hurt, is at your knees and your ankles. So there should be another cushion under your butt, okay, and under your thighs. I like this because it gives a real ground to you, okay. And the scriptures seem to insist that the back of your butt be higher up than the front of your butt, okay. And I think this one does it well. Then you go into Vairochana, 7 or 8 point posture, which means you know, head straight up like a soldier. Even if you open your eyes or close your eyes, which is the eighth one that they debate about. I mean, you can either open them like halfway, or you can close them If you're a person who gets distracted easily, close them. If you're a person who gets sleepy easily, open them. And they say, look at your nose. It means at the level of your nose, and it doesn't mean stare at your nose. And I've seen so many Westerners going around with crossed eyes because it was translated wrong. It means on the plane of your nose, meaning focus them loosely out here. Okay, like you're aware that there's something there, but you're not focusing on it. Okay, you want to get into the state you would get in when you're reading a very good novel, and you're like all crunched up on the couch, and you're like that, you know, or you're listening to your favorite song, and your eyes, you know how your eyes just unfocus, you know, you're hearing Neil Young, and your eyes are just like that, you know. When I was really into it, my would drool, you know, and you're just like that. And that's a state of samadhi. Like a good movie or a good book or a good song, that is a state of samadhi. That's what you want to reach. It's this wired. It's this, it's nyam shak. All the words in Sanskrit, samapati, samhita, and samadhi, they all mean, sama means you're halfway between thinking about too much and being dulled out. And the goal is sama means to stay balanced between the two. Okay, that's always the goal, and all the Sanskrit words point to that. All the different Sanskrit words for meditation point to the same thing. You want to be balanced between these two extremes, and it's like driving a car. You know how you're moving all the time, you're correcting all the time. It should be like that, constant correction. Is my mind dulled out? Is my mind wandering somewhere? And you're correcting between the two. Okay. Hands should be left palm down first, right palm on top of that. In this system, there's 100 different systems of meditation. You're learning Vairochana, which is one of the meditation Buddhas, Dhyani Buddhas. Okay, and then you join your thumbs and keep your back very straight. Okay, you can judge the straightness of your back by the pressure on your thighs and your calves. In other words, the pressure should be equally distributed. Like when you're in meditation, your back should be straight and slightly, very slightly tilted forward, so that the weight is evenly distributed by your whole leg and not just by the back or the front of your legs. Okay, I found it useful to, when you sit, then you pull your butt like this a little bit, and the flesh of your buttocks spreads out more, and it puts more weight. Divides the weight more evenly. Okay. What else? I found that elbows should be slightly tilted away from the body. I personally get hot when I meditate, and it keeps the air flowing in between here. Your mouth should be. You shouldn't breathe through your mouth, which probably means you should close your lips, but that you should be very comfortable and very not tight. Your muscles here shouldn't be tight. And the muscles here shouldn't be tight, okay? Very loose, but not open, and not slobbering or anything like that. This prevents you from swallowing too much, and later the swallows will disturb your meditation. Your shoulders should be even and straight and relaxed. Some of the lamas I know, like great even Sri Lankan meditators, they go like this before they meditate, you know, and then the you're not like this, you know, okay? So you get into posture, then you go through these preliminaries. Oh, by the way, first you prostrate to the altar, and then get into your posture. Chaksa wa dang means prostrate. Okay, get down and first you prostrate. Now, the oral tradition is that you do a couple things before this. You do one physical prostration, then you get into posture, and the oral tradition says that before you start the preliminaries, you watch your breath. Okay? And that's, normally you try to get up to 10 breaths. The out breath is the first half, the in breath is the second half. Okay? And you try to focus your mind on this circle right here, these two circles, these two donuts, your nostrils, and you try to feel the air as it passes the nostril. Okay? And then you count 10. Counting means without thinking about something else. If you think about something else, you have to go back and start over again. If you're really honest, you won't get past 3. Or you might get to 18. Okay? I'm speaking from experience. And then you have to go back. There's a special case if somebody slams a door or something like that, or you hear a car horn. If you bring it back without losing count, it's okay. Okay, that's an act of God. You can't control that. Okay, so that's okay. But generally, if you think of something else in a big way and it starts to disturb the count, you have to start over again. I say start over 5-6 times. If you still can't get to 10, go on. Okay, because you don't have time. Your body will start to get hurt in a while, and you have to keep moving on. I don't give any of these more than 10-15 breaths each. Okay, and that's enough. That's what you need to do. So then you watch your breath for 10 counts. Then you do, we say take refuge and go for bodhicitta. Go for refuge and do bodhicitta. So go for refuge means you can either do cause refuge or result refuge. Cause refuge means think about the Buddha or the Dharma or the Sangha, identify some beautiful thing about them that you admire, and aspire to it like that. Like, I would like to be able to read the minds of every person in this room and see their future for the next few hundred years so I know what to teach them. Result refuge means I take refuge in Michael Rhodes, the Buddha, which is going to happen in the future. And how about sending me back a little help here? Okay? It's very funny. You can take refuge in yourself later. You see what I mean? And ask for help like that. It's, you know, all these SOSs and messages in a bottle going out to the future. You see? And then imagine that the day you become enlightened, you're sending back help. Okay? Like that. Before these preliminaries, you also do bodhicitta. Okay? Now, you can either try to imagine all living beings, which will take you about 3 years, or choose one person that you know is suffering emotionally or physically, and try to imagine that you could go to them and help them, okay? And that would be an act of bodhicitta, okay? And imagine helping them. That's a quick thing. It should take no longer than 10 or 15 breaths, okay? Now you're ready to start the actual preparations, okay? And the first one involves inviting some holy being to meditate with you. So you imagine the holiest being that you can imagine. Okay, a lot of people, I think, if you're honest, it would be somebody that you grew up with, like Jesus, or it might be Gandhi, or any being that you relate to as being very holy. Later, when you have a deep relationship with the root Lama, or with His Holiness, or Lama Sopa, that you can visualize them, or Jetsun Kapa, or, but it should be whoever you would like to be like Mother Teresa or whatever, it doesn't matter. Somebody that you would like to meditate with, someone that would be an honor for you to meditate with them. And then you visualize them in front of you. Traditionally, they're up on a throne about eye level. Personally, I find it a little more intimate if they're sitting in front of me, like a friend. And when you visualize a person, don't visualize a tanka. Okay, I think a lot of people visualize pictures, and it's flat, and it's a postcard, and it's only about this big, and you know, don't think like that. Visualize their outline is the first step, as if there were a light behind them, okay, like a silhouette. That's the first step. And then fill in the colors of the eyes, and then do the eyebrows, and then do the whole face, and then do the hair, and then do the shoulders, and then fill them in carefully, visually. Then go on to do their other qualities, physical qualities, like watch the eyes twitching a little bit, and the chest rising and falling, and a little bit twiddling now and again. And then try to do the way the subtle sounds coming from them, like their breath, and the warmth of their body. And holy beings have this scent. It's called the Tsuchungituma, means the fragrance of a moral person. And there's some kind of, like a sandalwood smell or something. You know, whatever is your favorite smell. Can't be apple pie smell, okay? But some kind of good smell coming. Jasmine is wonderful. You know, and we say Tsuchungituma. You know, if you brush by His Holiness or something, or Lama Sopa, you often get this faint smell comes to you, you know. And it comes from they keep their vows nicely, okay? So that imagine all these things. Like, visualize them as a real person, okay? Then you do a chakta, okay? Then you're ready to do the first of the seven preliminaries. Chakta wadang, which means you've already done one physical prostration, now do a mental prostration, okay? In your mind, bow down to them. That requires thinking, what is it about them that you admire? See what I mean? It's not enough to keep prostrating to some picture of Buddha. If you don't think about what it is about them that you admire, then the prostration doesn't mean anything, okay? You're not prostrating to, you know, Andy Weber's paints and you know, National Paper Company's paper. You're prostrating because they have some quality that you would like to have. So as you do the prostration, now we're talking about a mental prostration. You think about some good quality they have that you would like to have. Like if it's Gandhiji who's meditating with you today, you imagine his ability to do an act of truth, to do what he believed was right, even at the expense of his physical well-being, okay? That he was willing to do something like that. And then bow down to that mentally. To think of his good quality is to bow down. That is a mental prostration, okay? Now we go to the next one, Chöching. You don't have to. Chöching. Say Chöching. Chöching is offering. And this offering is mental. It's good to do a physical offering every day, like water bowls or fruit or anything on your altar, and change it every day. But this one is mental. The classic one is called Samanta Bhadra's offering. You picture the whole sky and cover it with flowers. Okay. You know, just this whole, they call it a cloud, meaning little masses of beautiful things that you can imagine are floating around in space. Okay. They say there's a special power to offering natural things that are not owned by anybody, like the sunset over the ocean, or forest, or flowers that you've seen by the side of the road, or something like that. And then the ultimate offering is offering your own attempts to practice. So you might say, you know, today I'm going to have to meet someone that I have trouble with, and I'm going to try to be patient with them. And when it happens, you please accept that as my offering to you for today. So, you know, I do a proactive offering oftentimes. I know the difficult people I might meet today, and then I offer in advance, you know, my patience or something. And I say, you can have my patience at 3 o'clock with this person. You know, and I make an offering like that. That's supposed to please them more than any other offering. Okay, it could also be something good you did yesterday. Okay, that's okay too. Chöching, I'll throw in. So that's number two, and that's still mental. I don't spend more than 10 breaths on each step. You know, I actually got into this mode of I know when 10 breaths are up, and then it's important to keep the meditation moving. If the meditation bogs down in the preliminaries, then your butt starts to hurt and your knees start to hurt, and you start worrying about being late to work, and then the meditation breaks down or it gets rushed at the end. So go through the preliminaries carefully, but do them in a very deliberate way that you're moving on, you know, every 10 or 15 breaths. Don't get hung up in one preliminary and then have to rush the meditation or feel nervous that you're going to miss work or something like that. Okay? Chöching, Shakpa. Yeah. Verbs require normally a wa, oftentimes. Okay, so chakta wa means prostrating, dung means and, chud means offering, ching means and.
And this is a verse, the whole.
Yeah, I'm giving you the first line of it. It's going to be 4 lines. Oh. It's good to memorize it. Okay. Chakta wa, jin jin ya ba da. And then there's some more. Okay. Shakpa is a verb that means to split something open, like when you take a piece of wood and you hit it with a hatchet and it falls into two pieces, that's called shakpa. Or when you do a operation on someone and you cut them and you open them up, that's called shakpa. So it means to bare your heart. And in this case, it means to think about some bad karma you've done and admit it to yourself openly, which is the hardest person to admit it to. Okay, just admit it and say openly, yeah, I did that thing, and it's wrong, and I'll try to stop those things, okay? That's shakpa. If you know the four powers, you can run through them very fast at this point. I like to do that. And if you don't know them, talk to somebody who is in Kathmandu or Bodh Gaya. Okay, I think we actually will go through them. Okay, but those are ways to purify old bad karma. Tushin Shangana Deva Ladeka Nepa Girachin Matuma Shana Dedamin Girachin song means it's part of our monk sojo. Tushin Shangana Deva Ladeka Girachin means if I admit everything openly to other people or to myself, then I'll feel better. Matuma Shana Dedamin Girachin song means, but if I don't admit it and I kind of hold it in or try to conceal it even to my own heart, you don't feel right. You don't feel good. You know, that's part of the monk's confession ceremony. Okay. You feel like empowered if you admit things, okay? And that's it. Admitting it goes a long way towards purifying it. Deciding not to do it again is the most powerful method to remove the karma that you committed, okay? So the whole point of the preliminaries can be divided into two parts, clearing out your old bad deeds and collecting new good karma just before you meditate. It's like cleaning out a battery and then loading it full of fresh water and then starting the car. You see what I mean? And the whole point of the preliminaries is that when you get through the last preliminary, you should be already halfway into samadhi. You know, just by the good power of the six of the seven preliminaries collect good karma, one of them removes bad karma. This is the one that removes bad karma. And then you go into the meditation and you're already like halfway there. Okay? It's very important just before meditating to pick up some very powerful good karma, and then you just drop into meditation. You see what I mean? It's very cool. That's why I like to do a book before a class or before meditation or something like that. Okay. We're now going to write the second line, so you can erase the first line. Say, Jesu?
Jesu.
Yiram. Jesu Yiram.
Jesu Yiram.
You know, I tell people this many times, and sorry if you heard it already, but you know how Catholic churches have these special little rooms you go in and tell the priest what you did wrong, right? Confessionals. When we build Buddhist cathedrals in the future, they should have a confessionals on one side of the, was it narthex, or I don't know what they call it. And then on the other side, there should be rejoicinals. And you go into a little box, and there's a monk on the other side or a nun, and you say, I have something to tell you. And they say, what? And they say, someone came up to me and got angry at me today, and I just smiled and treated them politely. And I said, let's rejoice, you know. okay, I mean, you're required before a meditation not only to purify what you did wrong, but you're required to be happy about what you're doing right. Okay, you're required. And in our background, Judeo-Christian background, and I'm speaking from my own experience, and my students are very, I've noticed a very serious tendency to spend a lot of time on the confession part or the purification part. And then when you say, well, did you spend any time on the rejoicing part? And they feel like somehow it's not right, or it's being prideful, or it's somehow selfish or something like that. That's a wrong idea. That's completely wrong. Okay, you have to give equal airtime to being happy about what you're doing right. And you have to honestly scour your life for the last few days and see what you did right and be happy about it. Now, from personal experience also, there's a lot less stuff available there. But be happy about the little progress, okay? It's important to be very happy. For every good thing you did, there's about 5 bad things or 10 bad things. That's true. But you got to identify the good ones, and you have to be happy about them. And I always say, someone watching you meditate should be able to guess when you reach this stage in the meditation from your face, if you did it properly. So I mean, I have a lot of students who finally get the idea and they start giving equal time to rejoicing, but they don't really rejoice. They're just rushing over their good stuff. And someone who's doing a good rejoicing, your face should show, you know, your face should just like light up, and the edge of your mouth should like start to move a little bit, and because you're really seriously considering all the good things you're doing with your life that you didn't used to do, okay? And that's really important, okay? That's Jason, you know? Say, Kulshing.
Kulshing.
Shing means and. Kul means asking people to teach the Dharma. So you try to imagine the great teachers like His Holiness or Lama Sopa, and you, in your mind, You go to where they are. I like it. Lama Sub is fun. You know, where is he today? He's in a retreat in Mexico on the eastern seashore. You know, so I just go there and see him. You know, he's probably freaking out all the fishermen doing some ritual by the beach, you know. And no, you just imagine, what's he doing at this moment? And according to what you know, where he is, you know. And then you just imagine him and you be happy about what he's doing. He's saying, I'm sorry, that's the Jason, you know. I forgot to tell you during the rejoicing, it's very important to rejoice in other people's good karma. So to be happy about what Lama Sopa might be doing at this moment, or His Holiness the Dalai Lama, according to all the scriptures, you get 10% of their good karma. If you compare that to 100% of your own good karma, it's more. So so it's good. And all the scriptures say 10%. I'm not doing a diamond dealer thing on you. It's true. Okay. Now, cool means, again, you picture them, and you picture yourself in front of them and say, please keep teaching in this world. You know, please keep teaching. Okay. To have a Dalai Lama wandering around the planet, giving free teachings all over the place, is beautiful to think about, and ask them to keep going. Okay, that's called cool. You can also ask for teachings from the people around you at this point. You know, may I get teachings from the very sweet people who live around me. You know, may I be sensitive to the sweet things that people are doing around me, and may you, you know, children can come up to you on the street and say something to you. It can be a teaching. You know, somebody can yell at you on the subway. It can be a teaching. And I always pray that I'll meet some difficult person who will teach me something today. Okay, then later during the day when it happens, you can't complain. You're getting your wish. You asked for it. Okay, I always think like that. I said, this is not just some irritating person showed up in my life this afternoon. I actually, they're responding to my heartfelt request. And they have showed up in my life. Okay, so it's a good thing. Kuxing. Say Sulwa. Sulwa Yi. Sulwa Yi. Sulwan Dapa means asking the great lamas in the world to stay for a long life, to stay in our world for a long life. Okay? And if they're real chukus, if His Holiness is really a chuku, they can stay as long as they want. Lord Buddha only left this earth because no one really asked him to stay, indicating that no one felt they could still benefit, you know. And it's listed as one of the great mistakes of all time. I forget which, I think it was Moggallana, but somebody didn't ask him to stay at the last day or something, you know, for God or something, and then he passed, you know. And so it's important to ask them to stay. Okay. They will stay as long as you have the good karma to have them be in your life, and that will be there as long as you keep asking. See, I mean, sincerely, they will stay. Okay. I also think it's important to ask the good people around you to stay in your life. Now, sometimes they're Buddhist, sometimes they're not Buddhist. Some of the most moral people I've ever met had nothing to do with Buddhism. You know, like I was in Bombay 2 days ago, and there's this man there that I've admired for 20 years. He's a businessman. He's a diamond dealer. But he reeks of the fragrance of morality. You know what I mean? Like, he's just totally smiling all the time, and I've never seen him get angry in 20 years. I've never really seen him lie. And just this power that comes out of his being, you know. And I go to home at night, and I pray that he'll survive another few years so I can just be near him, you know what I mean? And that's another kind of sulwa, okay? It doesn't have to be a Buddha or a Lama or anything else. Yeah. That was number 5, by the way. Oh, 6. That was 5, and that was 6. Okay. You know, it says 7 limb puja or something like that. Only 6 of them happen before the puja. Number 7 happens after the puja. Okay? Here's number 7. Say gewa. Chungse. Daki. Chisakpa. Gewa means good karma. Now, we're referring to the good karma you just collected by doing the meditation. So between number 6 and number 7 is your whole meditation. Okay? So this is happening at the end of the meditation. You finish the meditation, It's very important to ask the holy being who's been sitting in front of you to come into your heart. And the classic way is that you ask them to come stay in your heart, and it's very important they say that you imagine that they break this big smile like, oh, I've been waiting for you to ask me, you know. And then they start rising up off the ground, and they get smaller and smaller, and they reverse position so that they're facing the same way as you. And then they come down on your head, and you feel this small pressure when they touch your head. And by this time, they're only like an inch high. And then at the level of your heart, they say your heart, which doesn't mean your heart. You're supposed to line up your two breasts and draw a plane back to your backbone. And then like half an inch in front of your backbone, you imagine a small chamber like a pea. And there's an elevator shaft going from there up to your tip of your head, which is about as wide as a McDonald's milkshake straw. And then you picture inside the chamber. Outside it looks like a little pea. When you get inside, there's a quite spacious room in there. And there's this huge lotus flower. And then on top of that, there's this beautiful sun cushion. And then you invite them to come stay there and hang out there all day. Like, remember I said that you're supposed to try to stay in samadhi all day. And this helps you. You know, all the problems you have all day, anytime you need something, you can actually communicate with them. You know, you imagine them, picture them in your heart. And you go there, you know, somebody yells at you, or your lama yells at you, or somebody says something bad to you, and then you just go to them. You're upset, you know, and you go and you say, you know, and they're like, everything's okay, don't worry, keep patient, you know. And then you come back out, okay? And you're just carrying them around all day. It's like a little refuge pill or something, okay, in your heart. Then you invite them to come into that room by bringing them down slowly. They keep shrinking until they could fit in the McDonald's straw. And then you feel them, the warmth of their body coming down right in front of your backbone, half an inch, and then down into that pee, and then they sitting there all day. And you can, to me, it's very, very comforting when I'm having a really bad day. I can keep checking in with them. They're always in a good mood. They're helping me out, okay? And that's the end of the meditation. When you finish that meditation, that last step, then you dedicate the virtue, and you see this light coming out of the pea, out of their heart, and then it breaks out of your heart, and then you send this beautiful light out to all living beings and help them. Okay, that's called dedication. Try to pray that the good karma you just did should help all living beings. Okay, and that just the act of meditation is a heavy good karma. So gewa means by the good karma I just did by having a meditation session. Chungsei means that little tiny karma I did. Chungsei means, like chung means small. Chungsei means tiny. Okay, chungsei means, okay, I was able to do a little bit of virtue today by some dumb good luck. Okay, chungsei. Daki means I was able to do it. Chisakpa means whatever amount I have. Okay, whatever good karma I've just done by meditating. Okay, ready? Say tamche. Daki. Chajub chir. Mo'o. Okay. Tamche means all that good karma, all that wimpy good karma I just did. Daki means me. Changchu means to my enlightenment and the enlightenment of others. Chir means for the sake of that. Mo'o means I dedicate it for that. And at this point, you see all this beautiful light coming out of your heart. It pops out of the lama's heart, and then it breaks out of the pea shell, and then it breaks out of your chest. And then you see this really powerful light going out and touching other people. And then you dedicate the good karma so that you can become an enlightened being to help other people. Okay? Now, how does that work exactly? Okay? How does that karma work? And how is that going to get you enlightened? Okay, this is where the actual meditation is supposed to start. This is how you close the meditation. This is number 7, the dedication. Okay, mo'o means I dedicate this karma. Okay, but between 6 and 7, we skipped about an hour. Okay, and that was the real meditation. That was the meditation. At this point in the text of the seven step dunduma, they describe two kinds of meditation, two very powerful kinds of meditation. Okay, I'll write what you're supposed to meditate on. Say semke.
Semke.
Semke. Semke is the Tibetan word for bodhicitta. Okay, sem means mind, ke means develop it, and it means bodhicitta. It's the Tibetan for bodhicitta. Okay. What is bodhicitta? We're going to talk about it. Okay. The important thing is there's two kinds. And you have to meditate on both of them at this stage in the lojo. Okay? Here they are. Say dindam.
Dindam.
Kunzom.
Dindam.
Kunzom. This is very, very interesting. And it's not taught very often. But if you're going to do lojo dunduma, you have to know both kinds of bodhicitta. Okay? And we're going to go through each of the meditations. It's two different meditations. Dundam bodhicitta is one kind of meditation. Kunzom bodhicitta is a totally different meditation. Okay? Dundam means ultimate. Ultimate bodhicitta. Ultimate compassion. Okay? Dundam. This one here. And then kunzom means deceptive. Okay? Deceptive. Zop, like when you say this guy's a fake, you say means this guy's trying to pass himself off as a lama, but he's just a fake. He never was trained. He doesn't know anything. That's called subzop. Okay, so zop means fake or artificial or liar, or in this case it refers to kunzop means deceptive. Why bodhicitta could be called deceptive is something we'll talk about. Okay, right now we're going to concentrate on the first one. Tonight, after the break, which is right now, we're going to concentrate on ultimate bodhicitta. Okay, ultimate bodhicitta, which is the next thing talked about in our lojong, refers to the direct perception of emptiness. Okay, ultimate compassion, the ultimate form of ultimate compassion, is nothing other than the direct perception of emptiness. Okay, and the text gives you that one first. Before they get to lovey-dovey bodhicitta, they talk about emptiness bodhicitta, okay? And that's the ultimate one. So we're going to do that right after the break. So take a 10-15 minute break. By the way, if you have a personal question or you want to clarify something that you're thinking about, you're quite welcome to come up during the break and just interrupt me and talk to me here. There's lots of students here from New York who see me every day, and they usually sit next to me, and you just break in and sit in front of them and ask your question. Okay, don't feel shy. Okay, if it doesn't happen tonight, feel any time during this course, during one of these breaks, just come up and throw out that question you're always wondering about. Okay? Okay, take a break.
Session 2 continues on the next CD.